We'll hear the oral arguments in Aiken v. Twin Spruce.
Your Honor, if I could just ask a sort of procedural question.
Sure.
Are you intending for Twin Spruce parties to sit at the appellant table or switching, or we're just not sure how you want us to do it?
Oh, that's right. That's a good question. I hadn't thought about it, but have you discussed between among yourselves who would proceed first with the oral argument?
Your Honor, Twin Spruce did file the first appellate brief, and we filed briefs 1 and 3. So I think we reached an agreement that Twin Spruce would go first.
Oh, and our suggestion that possibly following the briefs, maybe we should have 1 and 3 and then 2 and 4. We filed 2 and 4. It's an unusual circumstance. There's no appellate rule directly on point. However the court would like us to proceed, we will.
I think I had brief 5, and I'll just watch.
Same tables.
From my perspective, it seems that the plaintiffs had more substantive or wide-ranging issues in their appeal, and so I think it might make more sense for the plaintiffs to proceed first, if that's okay with counsel and with my colleagues.
Certainly.
So if that's okay with you, and that way those of you on this side don't have to move your from your chairs. We're ready to begin, Mr. Eismeyer.
Thank you. I'm Dana Eismeyer, with the firm of Burns, Spiegel & Will, 014379 is my bar number. With me is Julie Bierman. As mentioned earlier, Carol Steep is here sitting next to Mrs. Figa. Your Honor, this case, these two cases, two appeals, are about attorney's fees. That's all they're about. We're not challenging the condemnation ruling in Aiken 1. We're just talking about attorney's fees. So I want to make that clear right up front. Given the fact that there are two appeals here, we will first address the appeal brought by Steve Aiken petitioners. The key question is reinstatement. That's what this is all about. I won't bore you with the facts. You've read them. You know them. In fact, the parties, Prince Bruce and Aiken Steve, don't even disagree in the factual statement. The issue really comes down to, under the Colorado Corporations and Associations Act, was Twin Spruce properly reinstated? If it was, it owns property and it's entitled to attorney's fees under 38.1122. If it doesn't, that property remains with old dissolved Twin Spruce and never became part of a reinstated entity which entered its appearance. Essentially, looking at 790.1002, which is the reinstatement statute, which interestingly in this case, Twin Spruce waited for the statute to take effect in July of 2004 before reinstating. That's the reason that the meetings were held in August and September of 2004 involving reinstatement. So it's pretty clear that Twin Spruce was relying on that statute.
Mr. Eismeyer.
Judge Jones.
Before we get to any of that, we decided this issue in Aiken 1. The issue was raised that Twin Spruce was not lawfully reinstated. We have a holding on the merits that it was. Why should we revisit that?
Because, Your Honor, at the time, the only thing that was known were who the directors were listed in the articles of incorporation. None of the documents, TS 1 through 34, which are part of the record now, they were disclosed on December 20th, none of these were part of the record in Aiken 1.
But let's back up again. Whose fault is that? Because the plaintiff sought discovery. The court denied it. This is before Aiken 1 was appealed.
Yes.
And the plaintiffs did not appeal that order. They did not take full advantage of the opportunity to get discovery because they did not appeal that order. That's final. That order is final.
Your Honor, I think the issue is that the trial court's order, they didn't deny discovery. What they did was order counsel for Twin Spruce to provide evidence of reinstatement. And they did. And in fact, Mr. Wilcox has provided that certificate of reinstatement to the court. In fact, upon motion, in the Court of Appeals, Mr. McLaughlin provided that certificate of reinstatement again. So to the extent preservation is an issue, submission of that articles of reinstatement was preserved because it was submitted to the trial court saying this entity has been reinstated of an affirmative representation, and it was affirmatively presented to this court and argued as part of the attorney's fee issue. So I think it was appealed. That's why when I say these appeals are just about attorney's fees, they are. We're not going to the condemnation issue at all. That's why I believe, because of that affirmative representation by counsel, that reinstatement was appropriate, that issue was not resolved in Aiken 1. Otherwise.
But the court below made a distinction. It says, I will allow discovery on the issue of reinstatement. You must produce evidence that you're reinstated. I will not allow the request of discovery on your claim that Twin Spruce was fraudulently reinstated. That's what I'm talking about. That aspect of the order, that wasn't challenged on appeal.
Your Honor, my recollection of the appellate record, and this court was there, and I understand that, and our firm was not involved in that appeal. Our firm is involved in these cross appeals for attorney's fees. My recollection of the appeal was that when there was a specific, is that Mr. Yan, who was representing the petitioners at that time, attempted to bring that up in connection with a hearing, which was held in, subsequently was in a hearing, was cut off by the trial court. In other words, he did everything he could to preserve this question. I think the issue was raised because it was in, it's part of the reinstatement. The reinstatement is part of the eligibility for attorney's fees. If you're not reinstated, you don't own the property. And it's clear that they did appeal the attorney's fees.
The reinstatement certainly was raised, and we decided adversely to the plaintiffs on that issue. So that was raised. What I'm talking about is, if you want to go farther and say, well, look, we got new data, we get new information, new documents.
Yes.
What wasn't appealed, what we didn't opine on, was the order denying that discovery in Aiken 1, in 04 CV 10. That wasn't appealed. By not appealing, it seems to me the plaintiffs didn't take full advantage of the opportunity to litigate that issue. So why should they be able to go back now after there's a final verdict, a final judgment, and reopen it up?
Because, Your Honor, it was a final judgment as to condemnation, and it is, we don't dispute that. But it was remanded for hearings on attorney's fees, for calculation of attorney's fees. The attorney's fees weren't final. That's why it went back to the trial court. And that's why we're back here about attorney's fees only.
Your Honor, Eismeyer, let me follow up on your assertion that this case is only about attorney's fees. Yeah, if your contentions are correct, that Twin Spruce was never reinstated properly, doesn't that affect the validity of the underlying decision on the merits?
The answer is maybe. However, as this court pointed out, there are other property owners here. Nobody disputes that Four Corners or Twins and Dolores River own property. Nobody disputed that Cordy River or Cordy Wallace own property. Twin Spruce's reinstatement applies only to the eligibility of Twin Spruce to receive attorney's fees, and to the extent that any other defendant received fees for the reinstatement activities.
But as I understand your argument, part of it at least is that Twin Spruce was not properly reconstituted, was not properly appearing in the case. But if that's true, then how could there have been a judgment affecting any of the easement property that went across Twin Spruce's property?
Well, there was no judgment, obviously, because the appeal was denied. Nothing. the property remains an old dissolved Twin Spruce. Does the fact of reinstatement of Twin Spruce doesn't change the court's opinion, in my view. It doesn't affect the condemnation matter because there were three other property owners. And any one of those property owners could stand up and say, hey, you made a decision. I'm a property owner. I had standing to be there. I had a right to be there. I'm a property owner. The only reason that we're challenging this is because attorney's fees were remanded because the information that, upon which the challenge to the attorney's fees is based was not disclosed until after Aiken 1 and was not part of the record and could not reasonably have been discovered based upon the articles of incorporation at the time. Because, so I understand the court's point. However, and I guess one could make the argument that this somehow affects Aiken 1, but that's not the argument we're making here, and that's not the argument we've made in our briefs. We've said we're appealing property ownership as regards, because it goes to attorney's fees.
No, I understand you're not making the argument that I questioned you about, but it just seemed to me like there might be an inconsistency in that regard.
Were Twin Spruce the only owner who owned property? I see where the court is going, and I think the response would be, yeah, that would call it into question. However, if I was Four Corners or Dolores River, I'd stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, I am a property owner. And that would be, and it would take about that long for them to make that point, I believe. Again, I don't like to argue the other side's points, but that's where I would argue.
So just so I understand, you're not claiming an improper allowance of attorney fees to the other parties, just Twin Spruce?
Just Twin Spruce, except to the extent that some of the reinstatement matters may have been argued by Four Corners Dolores River because they acted jointly in several matters. They filed joint briefs in the Court of Appeals and cert to the Supreme Court. They, in fact, Mr. Hale argued for Twin Spruce before this court in Aiken 1. I don't know if they discussed reinstatement or not.
But they were successful in all those. So how could you? I mean, they're entitled to attorney's fees.
The issue is simply that with respect to Four Corners Dolores River, if there were fees in which Four Corners Dolores River was arguing reinstatement on behalf of Twin Spruce because of that joint representation, those would not be appropriate, in my view. They're not reasonable. To me, that's a question of fact for the trial court. It's not something this court to determine. It'd be something for remand, but it's not something that I think I can sit here today and tell you. I would also point out, Judge Jones, that the trial court granted attorney's fees to Four Corners and Dolores River without looking at their billing records, so we don't know if they did work related to reinstatement post-remand or not. But the majority of the fees are Twin Spruce. I think that's a fair statement.
All right. In the Aiken 1 opinion from this court, we said, and we remand the case to the district court for determination of respondents' reasonable attorney fees incurred on appeal. Now, that didn't sound to me like we're opening up the whole issue of who can litigate the case. We're asking the district court to calculate appellate attorney fees. So how does that open up the whole issue of Twin Spruce's reinstatement?
Well, essentially, Twin Spruce's argument is, well, it's the law of the case. It's been decided. The answer is, and People versus Royal, footnote 7, I believe, talks about it, newly discovered evidence arises. The court is not bound by its prior ruling. And in this case, there is newly discovered evidence, evidence that was not part of the record in Aiken 1, evidence that is part of the record now. And so I don't think this court is bound by that statement because that information had not been presented to this court through no fault of this court. It just wasn't available at the time.
But there is some fault here. I mean, there was an order saying you don't get discovery on this, and the plaintiffs didn't appeal it. So isn't it the plaintiff's fault?
Your Honor, I don't have the record in front of me. And I understand it is the responsibility of the plaintiff to raise issues. I think the plaintiffs did raise it by raising reinstatement as an issue, because reinstatement basically was the issue that was requested in discovery. I don't have the record in front of me, Your Honor, so it's hard for me to specify. Here's the site in the record. However, this is a voluminous record. One thing about a voluminous record is I'm fairly certain.
Well, let me ask you about that, since you raised the subject. There are possible two different possible ways of applying it for attorney's fees. One, the successful side in a 12b-5, that's one possibility. And the other is that the action is frivolous and groundless, and therefore attorney fees should be applied. That's the response to that last answer, along with your agree that this whole matter is frivolous.
Not in the least, Justice Rivera.
Well, what part of it is not?
The fact is...
You're only speaking to the attorney's fees now.
Yes. I'm not part of the COCA case. Our firm is only involved in the cross appeals where Twin Spruce asks for more attorney's fees and Carol Stephen and Jack Aiken said they should
pay. What about all the rest of the case that's been going on for the last 7 or 8 years?
Your Honor, I'm not qualified to speak on the other case. We are not counsel's record in that case. I can speak only to the issue of attorney's fees in this case. In this case, I don't think there's any question as a matter of law, Twin Spruce was not properly reinstated. I can go through the statute. The fact
we've gone through that time and time again. You say it's not properly reinstated, therefore they're not entitled to attorney's fees. All right, let's assume that's the case. But in this case, didn't Aiken accept opportunity to save his?
No, Your Honor. Absent.
And Aiken won?
These documents, TS 1 through 34, contain minutes of the homeowners' meetings, resolutions of the homeowners' meetings. There's no way for them to have known the board of directors was dead, and there was no vote of members to reinstate. Just random homeowners.
Well, what about the observation made by Judge Jones just a few moments ago to other counsel about the 1976 law regarding members? What's your view on that?
Because under the Colorado Corporations and Associations Act, there is a definition of owners, which is the term used in the reinstatement statute. Owners means shareholders, members, partners, and similar. The definition in the Colorado Corporations Act precludes...
When was that enacted?
It was enacted and effective July 1, 2004.
What about the one in 1976 that Judge Jones was referring to?
In 1976, the entity was formed. It was dissolved in 1982. But if you're going to reinstate a corporation, the reinstatement statute was passed so that entities could reinstate without going through all the issues involving equity and de facto and all the other stuff that existed before. That's why that statute was passed.
But don't we have to go back to 76 to decide who has the right to do the reinstatement? Because otherwise you'd be divesting people who did have the right of that right. How would that be fair?
Well, Your Honor, I think two things. First of all, there's no evidence that there are any members in this case. Members pursuant to the 1973 statute, which was in effect when Twin Spruce was originally incorporated, have to be specified in the articles. They aren't specified in the articles. And in fact, in the articles, if you look at the articles, it mentions members and other property owners, indicating that even in the articles, it doesn't specify members, but indicating if there are members, they can be different from the property owners, which is interesting. But ultimately, the reason for the reinstatement statute, which was passed in 2004, was to create a mechanism by which defunct corporations can come from defunct status back into the present. That's why it was created. And that's why we know that the property owners were not members and therefore not entitled to reinstate. And if they can't reinstate, essentially you have a hijacked name, but you do not have the property in the name of Twin Spruce. It still exists and dissolved from Twin Spruce. And I use the word hijacked.
Answer this question for me.
Certainly.
How could it be?
Good question. There are several means. Number one, we've argued that under the dissolution of nonprofit corporation statute, that there is a procedure to go to the public trustee, which when all the directors are dead, you go to the public trustee, and the public trustee has the option to dispose or convey a property.
Is a statutory provision allowing for that?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, it's 38-3173.
You've answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway.
Mr. Eismeyer, your time is up. Thank you for your argument.
Good afternoon. My name is David Dean, attorney registration number 28912, appearing on behalf of Twin Spruce Property Owners Incorporated. I would like to very briefly address a couple of notions that permeate these proceedings before I respond to the points that Mr. Eismeyer just made. The first is the reason that we're here. Over 6.5 years ago, the petitioners sought to condemn real property owned by Twin Spruce. They did so improperly and without authority. This petitioners do not dispute. Second is the notion of finality. First, the petitioners raised the issue of Twin Spruce's standing to participate in this matter in the prior appeal, arguing that individual homeowners are not members of Twin Spruce and that Twin Spruce was improperly reinstated. That argument was resolved adversely to petitioners. Second, as a division of this court noted, petitioners stipulated to the participation of Twin Spruce. Third, the concealed evidence or the smoking gun is the strongest evidence to date of Twin Spruce's proper reinstatement. But Mr. Greinberg refuses to acknowledge any of this or admit defeat in a legal proceeding, instead choosing to persist in litigating decided matters.
Mr. Dean, Mr. Greinberg is not a party to this litigation.
You're correct, Your Honor. In response to Mr. Eismeyer's contention that Twin Spruce has no members, petitioners did argue in their reply brief that Twin Spruce has no members entitled to vote upon reinstatement. In support of this, they cite Section 7-23-101 as it existed at the relevant time. Petitioners contend that this statute requires that members of a nonprofit corporation must be set forth by name in the articles or bylaws, or otherwise the entity has no members. I'd like to read very briefly from that statute. Corporation may have one or more classes of members or may have no members. If the corporation has no members, that fact shall be set forth in the articles of incorporation or the bylaws. The articles of incorporation for Twin Spruce neither list members entitled to vote, nor do they say that the corporation has no such members. I submit that the only reasonable conclusion is that the property owners within Twin Spruce are the members entitled to vote on the reinstatement of Twin Spruce Property Owners, Inc. I believe that if the property owners within Twin Spruce are indeed members entitled to vote, that is fatal to the argument of petitioners regarding the reinstatement of Twin Spruce. Addressing another issue raised by the petitioners regarding the concealment of certain documents related to the reinstatement of Twin Spruce.
Before you go into that next area, let's go back to the record for a moment. As I understand, the appellants, Akin and Stepp, challenged the question of whether Twin Spruce had been lawfully reinstated. And that the Harrises had lawful authority to reinstate Twin Spruce and that the reinstatement appeared fraudulent. All of this was brought out in the petitioner's request for leave to amend to substitute parties filed on March 7, 2005. Petitioner's merged response to respondent Twin Spruce's request for attorney's fees filed in April 15 of 05, and petitioners merged to reply to response objections. The petitioner's post-judgment motion to amend and substitute filed in April 18 of 05. Now, with all those, tell me about that stipulation and agreement from your standpoint.
Our standpoint is that it was stipulated to bring Twin Spruce Property Owners, Inc. into the action because Twin Spruce is the property owner. It's in the record. I cannot cite exactly where, but there is a title, a deed from Charles Butler to Twin Spruce Property Owners, Inc., executed in 1976. That property was still titled in Twin Spruce Property Owners, Inc. name, as shown by title commitment documents at the time of the stipulation.
Now, your opponent suggested that the reinstatement could have been done following the statute.
In regards to the public trustee?
That's correct.
The statute referred to, first of all, specifically applies when all directors are dead. It does not say when some of them are missing. But more importantly, it specifically delineates the power and authority of the public trustee. And that power and authority is to convey or dispose of the corporation's property. Nowhere is it mentioned that the public trustee is empowered to or is required to defend legal proceedings against a corporation whose directors may be missing.
Mr. Dean, what does the statutory scheme contemplate when two of the original members are deceased and the third one is missing?
The statutory scheme would consist of, if the document does not specify the vote required for reinstatement, an affirmative vote for reinstatement must be obtained from, and I quote, owners and other persons entitled to vote in the same numbers that required for a vote to dissolve the corporation. It is Twin Spruce's firm belief, as it was of independent counsel Ted C. Wright, who took care of the corporate reinstatement, that in this situation where the articles of incorporation do not provide that there are no members entitled to vote, that the property owners within Twin Spruce are other persons entitled to vote upon the reinstatement. I submit that if Twin Spruce had indeed followed the course of action that petitioners urge now, if Twin Spruce had petitioned the district court to publish notice and had requested the public trustee to act in this matter, which I represent the public trustee does not have the expertise or power to act in such a way. But if we did so, I submit that we would be here today, but Twin Spruce's attorney's fees would be much, much larger than they are today. I'd like to briefly address the issue of attorney's fees. Twin Spruce acknowledges that it did initiate one of the instant appeals. However, it did so only because it still has yet to be made whole. It must be remembered that Twin Spruce's post-remand fees were incurred solely as a direct result of petitioner's continued conduct in this litigation.
Well, now, in all fairness, I asked the opposing counsel two grounds of attorney's fees. One is a 12b-5 successful applicant, and the other is if the case is determined to be frivolous and ground justification.
Your Honor, my view on that matter is that a portion of these attorney's fees that Twin Spruce is seeking are statutory. Those are the portion that the trial court declined to award Twin Spruce due to a concern of perpetual attorney's fees. Twin Spruce does not seek such an award of perpetual attorney's fees.
It merely That's not my question. Why don't you answer my question?
I will do so, Your Honor.
It would be better, easier to answer your own.
In regards to our request for attorney's fees based on petitioner's frivolous appeal, I would simply state this. First, this is not a request that Twin Spruce makes lightly, but I would ask the court to please keep in mind the two notions that I referred to earlier. First is the fact that Twin Spruce proceeded improperly to condemn property without authority. And this
Twin Spruce improper?
I'm sorry, petitioners. Okay. Proceeded to condemn Twin Spruce's property without authority. They still do not contest this. But second and more important and key to our request for sanctions and double cost is the fact that petitioners refuse to acknowledge the concept of finality. Petitioners have caused and are continuing to cause a small nonprofit homeowners corporation to incur significant costs over the course of over 6.5 years of litigation to date because of petitioner's refusal to acknowledge the binding effect of this court's prior ruling.
Mr. Dean, in one place in your brief, you refer to double costs and ask for double attorney's fees. Is that what you're actually asking for?
Under the rules, we are entitled to ask for double costs if the panel finds within its discretion to award double fees as damages. We would request such, but we recognize that they are not specifically provided for by the rules.
What about the 12B5 issue on attorney's fees? That's full.
On appeal? Yes, we request attorney's fees under that rule as well. Nope. The panel has no further questions. I'd like to make a concluding remark.
Before you do that, Mr. Dean, just to go back to my question. So is it my understanding you're not asking for double attorney's fees, or that you are if we find that they're appropriate as some sort of damages in favor of Twin Spruce?
We are asking for double attorney's fees, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Is there any case that you're aware of where the appellate courts have awarded double attorney fees?
No, there's not, Your Honor. In conclusion, finality is an abstract motion until put to the test, and these proceedings have put that notion to the test. I submit to the court that whereas here, litigants express a willingness to relitigate previously decided matters, the court must step in and give teeth to the notion of finality. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Thank you again, Mr. Eismeyer. We appreciate both of your oral arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes the proceedings this afternoon for Division One. The court will be in recess and the bailiff may so announce.
Thank you.